With hope and positivity, the Rorick Automotive Group will be back to business as usual in just a couple of short weeks. In the meantime, shopping online with knowledgeable and dedicated representatives is key.
Plus, look for the Driving Positivity campaign through social media to keep our spirits up and to remind us all that we are in this together, Pittsburgh. In the meantime, visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
And now for the Ajagoff podcast. Wonder where we'll be.
24 Borough.
According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word Jagoff is defined as a noun, which means a stupid, irritating, or...
Here's how Pittsburghers define a word Jagoff. When someone cuts you off on a parkway.
Jagoff!
Or someone scares the out of you.
Yeah, Jagoff!
Or it's a term of endearment.
How you been, Jagoff?
This is Mark Madden.
Hi, this is Larry Richard.
This is Ken Wild Bill.
Hey, this is Kurt Angle.
Hi, this is Rocky Blair.
Hey, it's Rick Seaback.
Hi, this is Greg Brown.
Hi, I'm Tyler Kennedy.
This is Antonio Holmes.
And this is the Jagoff Podcast.
So this is the Jagoff Podcast, and we have a star-studded cast today for this Easter Passover version. We know you have some time off, and you're bored with the quarantine, so we made it, just ordered a whole bunch of awesome
favorites.
Guests for today.
Yeah. Like, if we took a poll on who you would want, they're on this podcast.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So, you down with the NP? Yeah, you know me. Easter and Passover. I've been dying to do that. I've been cooped up too long.
If you're listening for the very first time, this is the Ajagoff Podcast, and you listen to it on radio.com. You subscribe to it. On every Monday, it comes out on the KDKA radio website, and then radio.com app, and then every Tuesday on yajagoff.com. And if you are listening, please go over to iTunes and make a comment for us. We really appreciate it.
And so what was on the blog? Well, we're almost done with our competition.
I know, right?
That's crazy. That means we have to start being clever and blog again.
And as you're listening to this one now, the final four is up. And the winner to be announced on, I think it's April 15th.
So Wednesday. Pretty cool.
Yeah,
so. All right. And so the other thing we have to talk about other than our brackets is the HO1KB competition, which is House of 1,000 Beers. Go check out our video on yajagoff.com, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. We had so much fun making it. And basically, we're challenging you to build your own house of beers. So basically, you have to just have 12 beers in it. We're not even judging you on what they are. They could be Natty Light. It's okay. Whatever it is, you know, it is, but just show 12 of them. And as long as there's 12, it could be a house made of anything you want it to be, from popsicle sticks to,
yeah,
I don't know, wood.
Belly.
Right? Whatever you want.
Who
yeah.
cares?
Yeah, that's just there you go. Anyway, and then you post them. All the rules and regulations are on House of 1,000 Beers, as well as on the Jagoff website and online on Facebook. So check it out. And once the judging's over, you win some really cool stuff, like a year's worth of Sammy's.
How about it?
And some Jagoff stuff.
Some of the best Rubens in the city, as they say. Or the best Ruben in the
city. If not the best,
yeah. And again, where will we be next week?
Here.
Yeah, right. We're looking forward to getting the podcast out and about again. If you have ideas on what we should talk about, a guest we should have on, or where we should go once this quarantine is over, email Rachel, that's two A's, R-A-C-H-A-E-L, at yajagoff.com, and tell her where you want us to be.
If you don't hear back from me, it's because you didn't spell my name right, Yajagoff.
Right. All right. So today's podcast is awesome because we lined up everybody as we were trying to get everybody through to make up for the podcast guests we were supposed to have on at the parade,
right.
St. Patrick's Day parade, and guests we haven't had on for a while. Today's lineup, ready? Here we go.
Crazy.
We have Jim Rooney.
Yeah.
We have Scott Harbaugh. We have not Natty Light, but Natty Bensavenga.
She would love that.
And a band that we've been trying to have on the podcast since your mom's
the ultimate liver function. Yeah.
Is Tim Vitullo Band. Tim Vitullo is
love.
Here, so this is awesome. And Rachel, how did we forget this to be on the blog? It never made the blog, but the Conways, you know, the famous Conways from Instagram.
Mm-mm.
It was Kathleen's
Mm-mm.
birthday.
What?
And we forgot there was so
what?
As we lead into our first guest, happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy.
we've talked in joking back and forth about who our favorite guests have been. And then this year at holiday time, we actually mentioned like who our favorites were. And obviously, it's no secret at this point that Natalie Benzavanga is one of my favorites. And we've been lucky enough to consider her a friend at this point. So obviously, when we're in the middle of a pandemic, it makes sense to have one of our faves. So welcome to the one and only Natalie Benzavanga.
Oh, that was so sweet. I'll send you your check in
the mail. Thank you. I was hoping for that. But you know it's true. That's the great part. You know that it's true.
Well, I always love being with both of you as well. So thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. You're sweet for always kind of playing whatever thing we have going on at this point, you know, including you and Sarah coming to the Arcade Theater. And by the way, winning. But you're playing along with us as far as our couples event on February 14th. So it was really cool.
That was such a fun night. I really enjoyed hanging out with your parents that night too, Rachel. That was really cool.
Aw, thanks. Well, and you guys, what I loved most about it was when you look at it, and you know, just to recap anyone who didn't hear, we did, you know, various couples. So we had Heather and David, you know, who are the anchors of all anchors for PTL. And then we had my parents who have been married for 40 plus years. And then you and Sarah who worked together on a regular basis. And the best part was the two ladies who worked together proved to be the ones who knew each other the best.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Right. And just so you know, Rachel and I were pretty confident that we could have won that game.
Yeah.
Although
we
wrote the questions, but I think we're pretty sure we could have given you a pretty good challenge. So if you guys ever have a game show, we want to be in it.
Oh, that was sad, huh, Nat?
I hear a challenge, and I love a challenge. So anytime, John, anytime.
Oh, it's the best. Now, listen, you've had a few changes coming up in recently, and we thought we want to get you on the podcast because not because this is a, hey, goodbye, Pittsburgh. This is a, hey, Pittsburgh, here's my next chapter. Here's how to follow me. Because for years, you were part of the PGE and all of the things going on. In the meantime, the crux of your job was to connect Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh nonprofit organizations, people, so that you could get the word out about so many good things and positive things going on in Pittsburgh.
And do it well.
Yeah. Yeah. And do it in such a classy way.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. So when I came on to the scene over six years ago at the Pittsburgh Post Gazette, I had a master's in social work and I'd been working as a therapist, but I'd also been working with a lot of marginalized communities and working in all different types of communities around the city. And I'll never forget the first night that I was officially on duty as the scene editor, and my first event was the Cinderella Ball, which is it's the creme de la creme of sort of the society events. And earlier that day, I had been doing therapy work in the Hill District with a family and a little boy that had lead poisoning and serious developmental issues, and there was a lot of trauma in the family. And dealing with that earlier in the day and then putting on a ball gown that night to cover a society event, I realized that if I was going to do this job, I had to make it more authentic to myself and my own ideas of what it means to be society. And so from that point, I really decided to redirect the column away from sort of the 1% black tie energy of Pittsburgh and instead refocus it on what's actually going on behind these events and why do these events need support. And so I tried to ground it so it was always a mix of course I'm going to put the ballet ball, I'm going to put the opera gala, but then I'm also going to cover, you know, organizations and very small budget events that are happening in maybe East Liberty or the Hill District or Millville or wherever you're going on, so that everybody would get a chance at representation and have their opportunity to be seen. And I learned this the hard way when I worked as a social worker, because I worked at a small women's shelter in the Hill, and I remember I told them, oh, you guys have never held a fundraiser. I'll throw a fundraiser. How hard could it be? Because that's how naive you are when you're 21
right,
years old. But,
right.
And I remember calling every single bank and large company in the city, and they all hung up on me like, who are you calling to ask for money for a party for your event? And we ended up throwing a small event, and it actually worked out really great. But because of that experience, I knew firsthand how hard it was for small organizations to get visibility. And so I really made it my mission to share the space of scene with those organizations, because in all honesty, they're the ones that need visibility the most. And I liked being the first one to sort of shine a light. And then a lot of times other organizations or other media organizations would start to pick up on that, and then they would start to help them blow up even more. And that was really what brought me a lot of joy and pride, was just showcasing all communities, especially ones that are often not portrayed well or stereotyped in media. I wanted the scene column to show that all of us, no matter our background or our race or our gender or our position in life, we're all giving back in ways, and that's what makes this city so remarkable. And so I did that for over 6 years now, and then started doing the advice column as well there, and that was fun to be able to do that. And so now that I've decided to step back away from the Post-Gazette and move on to the next chapter, while I'll no longer be the scene editor, I hopefully will still be able to do a lot of work with communities and organizations around the city and continue to share their good work and in other ways, I'm hoping. And I'm also continuing to do my advice column. It's syndicated at uexpress.com, so you can still check that out every Wednesday for people that loved the advice column. And I really enjoy writing that column as well.
And Natalie, and you have to touch on that, because I have to take one step back. Having had your position in somewhat of a capacity years before at a different publication, obviously, I know the challenges, like you said, of showcasing what Pittsburgh, first of all, we're told that we're behind the times anyway, right? We aren't in the latest fashion. We aren't up to the latest parties and what those social lessons are like. And so I think it's a struggle enough in our city to prove that we are able to kind of hang, right, in some manner. But also, like you said, not to put it out there in some kind of like falutin way, rather really expose it. And quite honestly, no one did it like you did, because that's exactly what you did. You took the event and said, we can be classy, right? Pittsburgh is a classy place. Mm-hmm. But the more important part is this. So kudos to you for that. But moving forward, oh, absolutely. I mean, it has to be said. And the syndicated part, this is what I need to know. I love the fact that you can handle awkward questions better than I think anyone I've ever seen. Now, everyone's familiar with the whole Dear Abby, right? But those questions, when you look back to the old Dear Abby days, are so 1950s, typical, like, what are you cooking and what color apron do you wear? You know, that kind of thing. You get hit with some major stuff. And I love the manner in which you go, because you don't say, you don't sit middle of the road, but you kind of offer both sides. How did that start? And what was that first question that you might remember that made you go, this isn't going to be as easy as I thought?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I think because I had a therapy background going into it and have my master's and have my license, I was used to handling complexities and the nuances of relationships behind closed doors with clients and with family. And so for me, when those first questions started coming in, when people knew that I was going to start doing the advice column, I remember one of them was about a woman who wasn't ready to have a baby, and she was sick and tired of everybody around her. She was married, you know, telling her when she should have a baby. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, you know, I'm going to be getting questions that are directed at my generation, and that are directed in a way that, you know, I'm not your mom's advice columnist in the sense that, you know, I come from a different perspective on things. I look at things a little more progressively, but I also, my concern was when I would read other people's advice columns, and I love advice columns, but I always felt like they were always telling the person what to do. And when you're, as a therapist, you never want to tell anyone what to do. You want to meet them in their space, in their experience, and try to shine some light, because at the end of the day, you want to be there to help them find their own power. You don't want to overpower them. Or at least that's how I always approach working in therapy. And so when people send me questions, no matter what the question is, the reason I often give both sides the arguments, and some people love that I do this, and some people don't like that I do this, because they feel that sometimes I'm either playing devil's advocate or, you know, I'm not giving a real answer, but I always am. If you know me at all,
exactly.
I've read the work enough. If you read between the lines, you know exactly what I'm telling them, but at the same time, they need to figure that out for themselves. And so I try to present it as if I was in a therapy space with people, but also more concisely and more directly. And I get that from my grandmother, because she didn't beat around the bush or anything. And so I try to always have that little bit of Italian grandma toughness in there to sort of, you know, add to the empathy that I'm practicing. And I really feel that people are doing the best that they can. And the fact that people are choosing to write to me is such an honor and a privilege. And I never, ever want to ever feel like anybody is being mocked or feeling like I'm making fun of them, because it is such a vulnerable position to share your concerns with the entire world that I take that really seriously. And I think right off the bat, people that read the column, that was the response I was starting to get, was that they could tell I was just trying to be very sincere and honest. And, you know, the truth of it is, therapy work is messy. And there were some questions that I've gotten throughout the years that I ended up having email exchanges with that person back and forth way long after the question was asked, that I never printed the follow-up stuff because it was so layered that it warranted more than one conversation. And so I always answer everyone that's ever written to me directly through email as well. It's never just, oh, I'm taking your question and just responding. I always let people know, here's what I'm going to say, here's why I thought this was. You know, if you have any questions, feel free to always follow up with me. And so I've always tried to create a sense of community. But you know what's really funny, Rachel and John, when I started doing both columns at the PG, I started getting people coming up to me while I was at a scene event asking me advice questions.
I'm sure you did, yeah.
And that was interesting. So then I would bring my notebook and I would, you know, scribble in the back of my notebook what they were asking. I could use it. And so that was fun. And then I remember I was at one event and this woman comes up to me and she's like, you answered my question. I was, you know, whatever I tagged her anonymous name was, you know. And she said, I just want you to know, I'm so thankful. You know, my mom was here and we worked through it. And I was like, oh, where's your mom? And she's like, oh, no, I don't want to point her out. You know her. So I don't want to make it a thing. And I started to laugh and I was like, oh, my gosh, I really have to start coding these questions, like changing genders, changing some of the specifics, because if people in the community of Pittsburgh pick up on it enough, I didn't want to start identifying people by mistake or by accident. So
yeah,
there have been some challenges, but it's been wild.
Wow.
I'm sure.
Definitely.
Now, you know, we always talk about what people ask certain people at parties, but that, now we know. We don't even have
to ask
them.
You.
But as far as your questions, have they picked up because of the pandemic thing that's going on? Are people, or have they changed the types of questions that you're getting?
Yeah, definitely. Since the pandemic, a lot more of the questions have been centered around anxiety. They've been centered around, I got one recently that the couple had broken up, but then the pandemic hit, and so they're kind of stuck together in their own space.
Yeah.
And that one was interesting because, you know, I guess they had slept together even though they had broken up, and he was like, oh, she thinks we're getting back together. And I'm like, well, you need to stop sleeping with her. If you're
Hello?
Together, don't sleep on the couch.
Natalie, I don't have your background, and I could have answered that one.
Right. Exactly. I mean, hello. This is just, you know, 101 here, people. But the funniest thing is, I think what we're really seeing are people struggling with boundaries. Because on this one hand, you have all these immense rules and boundaries around public, you know, being out in public. But then at the same time, we're quarantined and we're stuck at home with maybe just our partner or maybe with our family or extended family. And so then on the other hand, you're dealing with no boundaries inside a space. And so I think that's what's really getting to people, is just extending each other some grace and some patience.
Right.
Because this is an unprecedented situation where if we're lucky enough to be able to be at home, we're really at home with people.
Right.
And so how do you navigate that without, you know, feeding somebody to a tiger or something?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, as we were joking with you before you even got on to do our usual John and Rachel explanation, that we literally are the two who work together. We communicate with our team through Microsoft Teams. We've certainly not done podcasts on site. We've listened to and abided by every rule that's been given. But, you know, as we said, John comes here and works because he was already here. So he sort of became part of the Renovac family. But even that, I mean, I'm married almost 20 years. I know what the nuances that get to my husband, and I know what drives me nuts. But how crazy, because even before this, I could have told you that there's nothing that John does, right, that gets on my nerves. However, when you're together in this capacity, there's little things that you're like, oh my God, I know he's going to say this and I'm going to punch him in his face. So I need to walk away. So you do, you know, you're forced to kind of figure out ways of dealing with things in a positive manner.
Positive meaning punching in the face?
Not punching you in the face. Okay. I walk away.
I need a safe word right now. Safe word. You're going to be getting a column question from me right now.
That would be funny. But Natalie, and speaking of the pandemic, so, you know, you do find silver linings. And we know that you've been on a couple different shows talking about what you're doing now. Can you talk about what the future kind of looks like for you and how you're handling the positivity during the pandemic?
Yeah. So a few years back, I had started a side business, digital media consulting work. So luckily, I'm still doing that work. So I handle, you know, people's strategies, their PR strategies, their marketing strategies. I handle social media accounts, things like that. And that was just something I started doing because I started getting requests from people out of market to do that work. And so I began that maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So that's been good. That's kind of keeping me busy and active. I had also met with a book editor before the pandemic, probably at the end of February. So I'm working on some book concepts that's sort of jumping off points for my advice column.
Nice.
So that's a fun project.
Right.
Yeah. And then I am starting, well, I had been working on a concept for a talk show pilot. I've been working on that for about a year and a half. And I had had some movement there with producers and investors and things like that. And I'm hoping now that I have a little more creative flexibility that once sort of loosened up a little bit, I'm going to hopefully get some of those meetings back on track that had been scheduled for March and see if I can get some energy back with that, because I did have some momentum and then everything sort of stopped. What's interesting to me, and I'm trying to look at this, because I do like to find the silver lining. For me, I think I'm trying to allow myself rest. I'm not good at resting, and I'm not good at giving myself space to do nothing. Having said that, I'm really trying to give myself space to just be. And I know that sounds a little silly, but I do think that there is resistance in rest. And so I'm trying to look at it from that perspective by giving myself this time that everybody has right now is going to help fuel me and help me creatively as I move forward, because I don't really know yet what my next move is.
Right.
I had a couple of job offers already, but I felt like they were going to move me further away from some of my goals. And so I want to give myself some space to work on my creative projects.
Yeah.
But, and Natalie, I know what you're saying, and clearly we have quite the age difference, but I think similarly, you know, John even said to me, because I think I fall into that realm in a different way. Like, you know, we're concentrating on, okay, where does the podcast go from here? Where does our marketing go from here? What's the next thing that we do to stay relevant? Our ages are certainly something that we have to think about regularly. But on top of it, I have a family and children and school board and things like that. And he said to me 2 weeks ago, you've kind of stopped that crazy grind. And like you said, I was resisting it, and the pandemic doesn't allow you to resist it. And it's almost, you're never going to say anything about it as good, but like you said, it's the way you look at it and the manner in which you handle it, because I know I'm sleeping a little bit more. I'm realizing little things about my kids that I thought I was on top of, that I'm like, wow, I didn't realize this before, because you're so on the go, and who has hockey and who's doing this. So you're right. There is some kind of peace, you know, from this that you can kind of pull out of it. So, I mean, kudos to you for realizing that.
Well, you know, we all get caught up in busy culture. And,
right.
You know, and I think a lot of times, especially for a lot of younger professionals, it's, you know, who's going to make themselves the sickest first, basically,
yes.
Because it's like, oh, okay, well, you're doing this from 8 to 8. Well, I'm doing this from 8 to 10, you know, meaning 8 a.m. till 10
yes,
p.m. And,
right.
And so when you take that all off the table and you start to actually acknowledge where you are in your life and where you want to go, you know, like, and we were talking a little bit about this offline about, you know, I'd lost my dad and my grandmother within the past year. When you go through those real things, you start to recognize what actually matters and what should actually be a priority. And so right now I'm just trying to prioritize my relationships and what makes me feel alive and what's bringing me peace.
I love it.
We'll see how that goes. You
That's
know?
Awesome.
Let's
yeah.
Just try that.
For you. I love it. John, is she your favorite now too?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think we have to have a podcast with Natalie Bensavenga and Greg Brown.
That's because that's John's current fave.
Yeah, I think we have to have a party.
You know, I'm always up for being with you guys. So you don't have to.
Well, we appreciate that.
All right, Nat, question of the day. You know, this is always tough. So, yikes! I hope you can answer on record. As we know, we all come from these amazing cultures that make Pittsburgh this melting pot, and we know that, you know, it's either Passover or Easter or some holiday is being celebrated this weekend. So what would be your ultimate quarantine feast, or are you actually having that?
So I was raised Catholic, and so Easter was always one of my favorite holidays because I always got like a new Easter dress that my mom would buy me. And we would always stand outside because it was either snowing and freezing and we'd have the magnolia tree and we would be shivering in the, you know, outside in our pretty Easter clothes. I know Andrea Bocelli is going to be performing in an empty space, you know, singing for Easter. And I feel like I want to watch. I feel like I want to do something that helps me feel connected to my dad. In terms of food, I've been cooking up a storm every day because I really find food to be so therapeutic, and I love to cook, and I love to make new recipes. And I'm sure I'll figure something out in the fridge. But for me, I don't think it's going to be so much about the food as it is some kind of moment where I can try to connect to the space with my dad.
Love that. I love it.
Yeah.
And listen, as a Catholic, I'll give you a free pass. All Catholics are holy on Easter, so you're good. Trust
See?
Me.
There you go.
I've been a, listen, I joke about it. I'm a brainwashed Catholic with 13 years of Catholic school, and I still, you know, have faith, as I've always said, always have faith. But, you know, on Easter, you're always a Catholic, so it's all good, and we'll all be watching.
And I went up as a free agent. I went up as a free agent a few years ago, and the Presbyterians picked me up off of waivers. So,
there you go.
Natalie Bensavenga, where is everybody going to find you online now?
Yeah, you can definitely find me on Facebook under my name, Natalie Bensavenga. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Natalie Bensi, that's Benci. And if you have any advice questions, you can email them to me at asknatalieadvice@gmail.com.
A friend in Fremont, he sells used cars, you know. Well, he calls me up twice a year just to ask me how to go. Pretty good, not bad.
But we are so excited to have you, Scott. Thank you so much for having me.
I've been avoiding you guys for a day.
Well, you know, that might be one of my questions, just saying. You know, I have to tell you, John has said every week when we plan our little bullpen, he's like, Scott Harbaugh is going to come on. And it's become the joke of our company. We're like, he's not.
No, never. Matter of fact, it's funny. There, one of the emails I got from you guys back in, like, January, I remember mentioning to my wife, I'm like, I owe John so bad. I said, I need to get this taken care of, so we need to pick a Saturday that I can go do one of these things. And then I lost the email and never responded to it.
Yeah.
And then when the last email came up, I said, okay, I said, I'm doing this at John and Rachel's whim this time.
Well, thank you
for your patience.
No, listen, I don't know how old you are, but listen, I'm sure you know the Brady Bunch. And you know the classic episode when Jan has the crush on Joe Glass? He's this like...
Yes.
Well, you've sort of become, he doesn't have a crush on you, but you've become the Joe Glass because we don't think you exist.
there was an episode of MASH that way as well, right? There was a colonel. But Scott, you know, in your defense, I'll come to your defense. How many emails have you received from us that said, hey, Scott, it's Thursday evening. Can you be available Saturday at 9?
Tomorrow, yeah. Right? That beckons back to the day before the wife and the kid, and I could do that spur of a notice at any point in time. And I've noticed that the kid doesn't understand as easily as my wife did before he was born.
Exactly.
I know the one time we sent you as a matter of fact, I didn't realize he even had your cell phone number, and I went to text you today, and the one we were asking you to come on a Saturday, and you sent us a video of your son saying, I'm going to Idlewild. You're like, this is for real.
That was his birthday weekend. He turned...
Okay.
He turned three that day, and he wanted to go see Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood.
Oh, my God.
Typical Pittsburgher. I love it. That's awesome.
We didn't even introduce our guests at this point.
We didn't.
This is the Scott Harbaugh.
We threw him on.
You could say he's on Channel 11, but you could basically say he's a master of Twitter and Instagram. Wouldn't you say that?
I would. Yeah. I would definitely say that. No, you know I'm more an Instagram person.
But we appreciate this little Easter visit from the Scott Harbaugh Easter Bunny. Tell us, like, what's happening. And we're in the middle of this pandemic. You guys are all social distancing. How is the, I guess it's maybe a dumb question or whatever, but I'm going to ask it anyways. How is the life of broadcasting different today than it was even just a month ago?
I think you see a lot more people are actually broadcasting from home. I think all the local stations and national stations are doing that. I'm still in studio, but part of the reason is because the rest of the weather people are now broadcasting from home, so there's nobody touching the equipment in the weather center except for me. And I'm a good solid, at closest, I'm a good solid 10 to 12 feet away from Tricia Pittman. Gordon Lesh is at the news desk, so I'm at least 10 to 12 feet away from him when he's in the room. And beginning Monday, you're going to see Catherine Amenta doing news from the newsroom, so she's not even going to be in the studio anymore. So I think it's just, you know, I think what broadcasters had to figure out right off the bat is we've got to practice what we preach. And we can't say stay 6 feet away from people and then have two anchors side by side at a news desk. That just wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
And honestly, most of the production of the newscast, the writing of the newscast, video producing of the newscast is now done completely outside of the building. I'd say a month ago for the morning show, we probably had close to 20 people in the building at one time. Now we probably have 8.
Oh, wow.
And we're scattered all over. I mean, half of our producers produce from home now. Our reporters and photographers never entered the building. They have a safe space. The garage has been renovated into a safe space for reporters and photographers to come in, get equipment, do their editing, but they're not even allowed in the building anymore.
Oh, wow.
All of our managers are working from home, but that's just because I tell our managers they're non-essential anyway. But it's like every other business. Thank you, John.
No, right? I laughed.
I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, I was catching up.
I had to nudge him, Scott. I had to nudge him.
our corporate CEO sent a video email to all of us about 3 weeks ago, and she goes, myself, like other non-essential employees, are working from home. And I just started laughing. I said, we've been saying the CEO is non-essential for decades.
Well, and listen, I think it just shows the ability for people to have resilience. We talk about kids having resilience, but I think we've all had to, it's the old sink or swim. This is what it is. And as they kept saying in the beginning, and I think everyone's starting to understand now, this is the new norm. So you have to kind of just say, well, if this is what it is, here's how I'm going to survive it. And everyone's sort of figuring it out.
Exactly. And everyone has their own compass. So some people are dealing with it very well. Yeah. Some people are not dealing with it well. I've noticed our three-year-old, he was really lashing out about a week and a half ago. And he was screaming whenever I said he couldn't do something, or he was starting to, you know, take a swipe at me, which he hasn't done since he was probably like a year and a half old. And I said, I finally one day we're like, buddy, is something hurting you? Does your head hurt? Does your stomach hurt? And he said, no. And I said, then what's wrong? He goes, I'm upset. And I said, what are you upset about? And he's like, I can't go to Oakmont Bakery. We're not going to Disney World. I can't go see Gam Gam and Poppy because of the spider. Because we told him it was a bug that was going around.
Oh,
made of a spider.
Oh my God.
So, you know, they do get it,
yeah,
but they don't comprehend what it actually means.
Sure.
And so trying to navigate that with him and trying to, you know, let him know that everything's going to be okay in the end and things will eventually go back to some semblance of normal. But now every night when he gets into bed, he's like, I'm going to talk to the mommy and the daddy. I'm like, well, what mommy and daddy? And he's made up this mommy and daddy that are much like my wife and myself, but he talks to them about the virus while he's lying in bed.
Mm. Wow.
And he tells them things about the virus. So I'm guessing that's how he's dealing with it right now. But
sure,
for the most part, he's been amazing.
Right.
I just think he's ready to go to Oakmont Bakery.
No, I love that, Scott.
Well, pick us up on the way through.
On his cupcake.
That is so cute. Well, and I forget which of the, you know, we've heard from so many different people at the state level and national level and even local about, you know, how people are handling it and how we're reacting to it. But, and I forget who said it first and best. You know, we are equipped to be social people. We don't know any different, you know, not even the who hugs, who doesn't kind of thing, but just the fact that we are used to having conversations regularly. And so it's hard for everyone. And like you said, everyone's dealing differently on how you now accept this to be more of a loner. So that's great that he's kind of created this pseudo parenting, you know, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, as long as it's working for me, it's funny. Even people at work, are dealing with it completely differently. And it, you know, I think the big challenge working in any business is respecting other people's position on it.
Yeah.
And we had one person, I was talking to someone on my speakerphone the other day. One of our, technical people came into the room, and it was someone they hadn't talked to in a while. And they came over and went to pick up my phone. I grabbed my phone. I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, I apologize. I'm like, no, not a huge deal. I said, but you know, I said, I don't want other people touching my phone right now.
Sure.
Or it's a different day.
Or saddling up next to me at the desk.
And
I got off the phone with the person. I was talking to this person, this technical person. He was overly apologetic. And I said, I'm not upset. I said, but we all have to, you know, remember that not everyone's comfortable with being shoulder to shoulder right now. And for me, it's more because of the wife and kid at home than it is about myself.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it's funny because we go through the same thing. My parents are older, and you know, my son is like, Dad, you're being irresponsible by stopping, by wanting to see, you know, your mom and dad, you know, grandma and pap at some point, you know, and he's right, you know, because you get this feeling like, well, they're okay. They're contained. I'm contained. But the fact is, you just don't know where it's coming from. But it's amazing.
You could run into anybody in the grocery store who has it, doesn't know they have it. You get near them grabbing for milk, and all of a sudden, you're carrying it too.
It's crazy. No. Well, so let's get in. I love this fact that you already started talking about your son. I want to know, you know, Pittsburgh weather is hard to predict, and you take a lot of shots on Twitter when you're wrong and all this kind of stuff. What's harder, being a dad or predicting Pittsburgh weather?
Definitely being a dad. Right. Only because Rachel made reference early on. She doesn't know how old I am. I'm 49. So I definitely lived through the Brady Bunch reference, but I'm a 49-year-old with a 3-year-old. I'm dying here.
Scott.
Way too old.
God love you, brother.
It took me so long to find someone dumb enough to marry me. And then when I finally found that, we're like, okay, I better have a kid in a hurry. You know, we joke that we got married, bought a house, had a baby, all in 9.5 months.
And, wow.
And we didn't do so well with that. It was a lot at one time.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. And listen, I can understand because I have 3 children who range from almost 17 to 11. And
God bless you.
The difference, right? Well, I call them my posse now. At this point, it's like, listen, we got this, right? But at the time, my almost 17-year-old, you know, he kind of helped me with the 11-year-old because he had to. It was sink or swim, brother, because I needed the help. My husband was working. I had all 3 of them at home, and it was kind of like, well, we got to do this somehow. So I know what I felt like at 27 having a baby and what I felt like at in my mid-30s having my final one. So I feel for you. It's a different lifestyle.
It is. And it's, I am no different than anybody else in that respect. The only thing I joke about is I was basically on my own for the first 20 years of my adult life.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden that just completely. So there were definitely some growing pains for me. Unfortunately, I have an incredibly patient and loving wife who was like, okay, you know what? This is not the end of the world.
Sure.
But there were definitely some moments where I said, I'm losing my mind right now.
Right? I'm sure. Do you have any toddler indulgences? Like, I know, you know, we work a lot with Arthur Motes, and he says he sometimes finds himself saying, like, it's baby shark, shark, or whatever the heck that song is. Like, do you get into that kind of stuff? Are you a Paw Patrol dad? What's going on?
I am whatever he wants to be right now. PJ Masks is the big new thing
that
he just discovered last week. So he's Owlette because he likes the colors red and pink right now. So he's Owlette. I'm Gecko. And we go around the house and we get into a crouching position, put our arm out and say, we're fighting crime. I will do whatever he wants to do. I have had Into the Unknown in my head from Frozen 2 for the last week and a half.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. That's another good one.
I wanted to be a dad since I was a teenager, and now that I'm finally a dad, the only thing I'd never want him to do is say I wouldn't play with him or I wouldn't do what he wants to do. So whatever his movie is, whatever his show is, whatever he's playing with, I make sure I try to be as involved with it as possible, which is good. Fortunately, this morning he came downstairs and all he wanted to do was read books. So we got to sit on the couch for an hour and a half and read books, which was good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What about video games? Are you gamers?
I'm a sports video game person, although the time is lacking, but I will definitely, that's my stress reliever. He just likes watching YouTube videos on my phone, and
it's all about,
you know, cars and building things. And, he found this one, YouTube video that had this marble tube on it, and you actually build it and you put these marbles down and they go all around it. And then he goes, I think I saw this at Target. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. You did see this at Target. So now he keeps bugging me to go buy it at Target.
Oh, my. Yeah. Oh, they catch on quickly. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. They pay attention to everything.
Oh, absolutely. So we have like a little bit of a rapid fire session. Do you think you can accept that challenge?
It's absolutely.
Scott, it's a little bit part of your punishment for not coming on for help.
Well, John will tell you the punishment is going to be for you guys because there's no filter from my head to my mouth.
Oh, I know. I've understood that for sure. Actually, before we go into that, though, one question. And we know that of all the broadcasters, no matter what station you're watching, even though we're WPXIers, of course.
Of course.
Even though, you know, everybody has a comment. It seems like the poor weathermen, they get it the worst. You're heckled. They're, you know, what do you know? Or you're the best thing in the world if you bring the sunshine. Is the heckling going down a little bit since the pandemic?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, it's funny how weather has taken a backseat. You know, fewer people complained about the fact that it snowed the other day.
Yeah, right?
Complained even in January. Yeah. I mean, people are like, oh, well, it's been such a dull winter anyway, we can do this. And even with the severe weather the other night, no one was complaining that we were cutting in too much or we were alerting people too much or when the tornado warnings were issued, nobody said, oh, it's not really a tornado this time. You're just saying that to scare people because we did have two tornadoes. I'm finding generally people as a whole are nicer. People as a whole are willing to just, you know, realize there are bigger issues out there, except in grocery stores. People are just, they're so rude to the cashiers and to the people who are stocking shelves.
Yeah.
They're not the ones that aren't providing the toilet paper. They're just stocking what's there.
Right.
That's right.
And, you know, I know we talk about the frontline people a lot. We talk about doctors, the nurses. But, you know, I've been most impressed with grocery store workers. I mean, managers who I know are high-level managers are stocking shelves Sunday morning at 7 in the morning just to get out what they can get out. And I've been so impressed with the grocery store industry.
That's a great point. In the grocery store I was just at last night, they have someone out there literally slopping in water when it's cold out, cleaning all of the carts as they come back in. Someone is literally standing there doing that.
Wow.
And, you know, and yeah, that's a frontline worker if I've ever seen one, right?
Right,
you know,
they do need more clothes. Yeah, for sure. All right, I'm ready. Are you ready to
let's do it.
Rapid fire him?
Yeah, we should have a wheel that we spin.
All right, so here's the first question. What is, well, you kind of answered this, but your favorite toddler thing to do, what is your guilty pleasure? Like, you love when your son does this.
I love when he wants to sit and sing songs and act out characters. He pretends he's Elsa from Frozen 2, and he does the entire, I'm sad. I'm determined. I'm going to run across the fjord. I'm going to save my sister. I mean, he gets into it for a good solid 20, 25 minutes, and it's hysterical to watch.
I love it. I love it.
I love it. Favorite time of day?
Bedtime, 6:30 in the evening.
Okay. Oh, wow. Is that right? Wow.
I can't say I blame you. Okay. Favorite. Now, John has kind of tipped me off on some of your favorite things, and we understand that you're a baseball guy. So,
love baseball.
Okay. Who's your favorite team?
Pirates.
Oh, what's your reason?
I grew up as a Pirate fan. I know that a lot of people complain about what they feel has been the lack of money put into the team over the last couple of decades, but my theory is I'm rooting for the 25 players on the field, not the owner.
That's a great quote. Oh, man. All right, favorite stadium food at a baseball game?
That's a tough one.
Boy, probably a good old-fashioned cheeseburger.
Really?
They're big, they're thick, and they're really good.
Okay. Favorite baseball moment of all time? Like, if are you that guy that quotes, "Did you ever see when Sid Bream blah blah blah"?
Oh yeah, I definitely saw that. Unfortunately,
yeah. And if that's your favorite, you're fired.
I know.
My uncle was the team doctor of the Pirates for 20 years, so I got to know Sid Bream a little bit. A great guy. You hate to hate such a nice person.
True.
No, favorite moment by far, the blackout game, the wild card game in 2013. I had tears in my eyes in that place, and just the energy from an hour before the game all the way through the game, the Cueto chants.
Yeah.
Just never a better night in sports in my life.
Okay, that's a good one, Scott.
Favorite pitch. Do you have a favorite baseball pitch?
Oh, I love a good knuckle curveball because you just have no idea where it's going.
Uh-huh.
Nice. Favorite baseball movie? There's a lot.
There are a lot. Favorite baseball movie.
I'll be schlocky and tell you that mine is A League of Their Own, because the Tom Hanks, you know, before it became famous, we used to say that in my family all the time. Like, there's no crying and whatever, you know.
I don't know if I have a favorite, which is surprising because God knows I've seen all of them.
Okay. Can you go with a top three?
Yeah, I mean, Bull Durham.
Okay.
I rank up there. 8 Men Out.
Mm.
I really like a lot. And I saw 42 when it came out a couple of years ago, and that movie made me very emotional just because of all the stuff that Jackie Robinson had to go through. Just was unbelievable.
I heard that was great.
Yeah,
well, that's good answers.
I have one more baseball question for you: is favorite baseball manager?
Favorite baseball manager? Oh, Chuck Tanner. My grandparents knew Chuck Tanner very well because they grew up in Newcastle, about couple blocks away from Chuck's family, and the several times I ran into him, whether I was with my grandparents or with my uncle who was the team doctor of the Pirates, or even one time I ran into him by myself when I was interning with Lanny Vitteri, there's not a nicer person in baseball.
I would agree with you.
Just not a nicer person in baseball.
I didn't know him, but I had the opportunity to cross paths with him through Rotary stuff, and God, he's an amazing individual. Yeah, it's crazy.
Let me just side note on that. You asked favorite manager. Favorite player, Omar Moreno, the Antelope. I just love the fact that he was so fast and stole so many bases as a kid. I wanted to be fast like him.
Okay.
I love that you asked your own rapid-fire question.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, this is what we want. Yeah, look.
All right, and we can't let you finish a rapid fire without the obvious question. What is Scott Harbaugh's favorite season?
Hey!
Winter.
Is that right?
Me too.
Yeah. Is that because... Go ahead.
Still as a kid, I still love snow. The first snow of the year, I still cannot sleep the night before.
I'm the same way, Scott. I love winter, no matter how bad it gets. Just kind of like bury yourself in your house. It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's Christmas. It's, you know, it's the whole holiday season. Now, I will admit, Valentine's Day is my cutoff. Once we get past Valentine's Day, I'm good with the snow. We can start moving on to other things.
Yeah. That's a good point. You have to have a cutoff. Yeah.
Yeah. Once pitchers and catchers report, I'm done with snow.
There you go.
Do you think you could take Punxsutawney Phil in an arm wrestling contest?
No way. That thing is ferocious.
John just added that in. That was good. You went off script.
Thanks, Rach. Thanks, Rach.
Listen, we are so happy we finally had the time with you, and we're going to make you do this again at some point. We'll just start now.
When we're all in person again. Yeah, you're going to have to come to one of our porch tours for sure.
Oh, that's a great idea.
When everything gets back together this summer, you guys need to have one giant blowout podcast where it's just like a cast of 1,000 people that march through over the course of 2 hours.
I love it.
We accept that challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just have to find a place.
Yeah. All right.
We will
Scott's
do
house. Yeah. It's a sleepover.
Exactly.
It's a sleepover.
We'll get Oakmont Bakery, we promise. All right.
Listen, we have a question of the day now. This is the toughest part of the whole deal.
It's our common thread, right? So obviously we're recording over Easter weekend, Passover weekend. Everybody's celebrating a holiday. What would be your go-to feast? You know, your pandemic feast. Like, if I could have this, and maybe you're actually having it this weekend, what would be your kind of go-to meal?
My go-to meal for Easter, just my go-to holiday meal in general?
Holiday feast in general, yeah.
Okay, my holiday feast in general would be my family's old-fashioned Italian Christmas feast. We would have wedding soup and ravioli on Christmas Day. We'd start with the wedding soup, we'd do the ravioli, and then we'd have all sorts of sides and accoutrements. My grandmother would sit in the kitchen and make probably 10 to 15 pizzas over the course of a week.
Just made John salivate.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, I miss it because as a kid, there would be 22 of us Christmas Day, and now we all have our own families, and we try to do the traditions, but it's just not the same as when you were kids with all the cousins together. But, yeah, wedding soup and ravioli I could do every day.
That's a good one. I'm
a wannabe Italian. Would be my, yeah.
We actually, Scott, I'll just give you a little tidbit. My mother, same, that's my Italian side, and we make ravioli every Easter. So I am super saddened that this year I missed out on it, but we'll get back to it.
No, it's definitely a different time. I know, my wife's family, they do the sweet pie and the rustica from the Polish and German side of the family.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they're bringing some over and dropping it off on the front porch. But Easter's my wife's favorite holiday, and she's disappointed that we've chosen not to even be with grandparents and aunts and uncles this year, just to play it safe until we can get through this.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We appreciate
it.
Our best to Christina and your son. And, yes, we will see you when we all break out.
You guys have a wonderful Easter.
So this next guest, we normally are just hanging out way more casually at the St. Patrick's Day Parade. And it was serendipitous. How about that word?
That's a good word.
Serendipitous that we ran into him at a St. And now it's become a tradition that he's on the podcast every year.
Right. And there was no way to recreate the St. Patrick's Day parade. So it's going to be like a summer St. Patrick's Day Rooney salute or something like that.
So we went down to the bus station and looked for you this morning. You weren't there. Like, where is he?
Yeah, we did not, I swear.
So welcome to the Jagoff podcast. I'm going to call you a friend because I think we are. Jim Rooney, son of Dan Rooney, who does a bunch of things all around Pittsburgh, but recently rolled out a book called A Different Way to Win, Dan Rooney's Story from the Super Bowl to the Rooney Rule. So welcome back to the Jagoff podcast.
John, Rachel, I love being with you guys.
It's
fun. It's always fun to talk to you. And if you guys remember, the first time I teased this book was on your podcast.
You did.
Yeah.
You know,
I said
that was
I got
going
something
to...
big coming, but I wouldn't tell you what it was.
And what's funny is that was going to be one of our questions. So let me go ahead and mark that off on my bucket list here.
But that was the first time I ever said publicly that something was coming down the road.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. So, and, you know, that's the perfect place to start. Ironically, we have worked with a lady by the name of Corey Wamsley who coaches people on how to write books. And she preaches that everybody thinks it takes years. And, you know, even Arthur Motes being a dear friend of ours, we've picked his brain on what it was like writing a book. Everyone's scenario is different. What was yours? What kind of take us back to what made you want to do it? Because that was 2 years ago. And how that creation happened, like the evolution of it all.
Right. There's so much I could say there in and of itself. We could do a whole podcast on that. But,
right.
You know, it was something I wanted to do. I wanted to have my father's story out there in this different way. We actually, while he was alive, had talked about doing something related to the Rooney Rule. for the Harvard Business Review. So an article that we would talk about that pathway. And then my father passed away and I had several of these interviews set up. So as I went to each interview, we just saw that the story was expanding and Commissioner Paul Tagliabue, who was the NFL commissioner before the current commissioner, Roger Goodell, sort of became the big inspiration. He said, look, we should take this story further. And he had worked with my father since the early 70s. And we spelled out sort of three major things he did in the NFL. And then Ireland was sort of an obvious fourth piece. So we have in the book, there's four stories. There's my father's sort of support in transitioning the Steelers. There's his work in the NFL and the growth and his work with, the labor. His work with the Rooney Rule, obviously, and then his time in Ireland. So four major stories in the book, and we try to demonstrate that you can win and be a good person. That's sort of the message of the book.
You know, in one of the lines about the book on the Amazon website, it talks about, you know, a building consensus. And, your father seemed to be that kind of guy who could, use my term, reach across the aisle in an apolitical way. And because consensus seems to be so missing from our lives at this point, not to get political, but on social media, people get in their boxes. They won't listen to another person's opinion. And if it's your opinion, then I don't like you, whatever. I can't take time. But your father seemed to be, and I love that word, building consensus. He seemed to be very, very good at that.
Yeah, I talk about negotiating as one of the key things that he did well, and was always looking for a win-win. He believed that there should always be something left on the table for the other person, that they want to feel like they got something out of this negotiation as well, because he believed that, you know, in the long run, you wanted a relationship with people. It wasn't just, you know, always about something transactional. There is actually a Penn State football player who played for the Buffalo Bills and then became the assistant executive director of the NFL Players Association named Doug Allen. And Doug talked about the negotiations with my father. And he said, you know, so many of the other guys, this was hard to hear, but it was very poignant. He said, you know, some of these other people treated us like we smelled from labor, and your father treated us like family. He took us to lunch. He would take us out to dinner. He said, yeah, clearly he had a very strong, different point of view on certain issues, but he treated us in this way that was so respectful. And then he went on to tell me how that impacted the negotiation.
That's really interesting. Wow.
And what is your hope, having written the book and having told the stories? And, you know, we can recite the cliff notes, right? That 100 hours of interviews, more than 50 sports, and, you know, you say business and politics and leaders and all this kind of, I don't know, research and input went into this. What message did you first think you were going to convey? And is it the same message that was actually conveyed, or did you get something else out of it?
Rachel, that is a great, great question, because I've been...
Doggone it, Mr. Rooney. You know, this is our weekly competition of how many people are going to say that. And, well, that was so emphatic. She went and said, it's like a home run. I'm sorry, but go ahead with your answer.
John, we both know that Rachel is the inspiration behind this whole...
There's no question. Why? 100% agree with you there. Yeah.
but no, it's such a good question, because on one hand, I don't know that it's changed. We wanted to show this idea that you could have very, you know, I say a good person and win. You can have very high standards,
right,
and still treat people with respect. Right. And so I think we showed that,
yeah.
But it has evolved so much into, when I talk to businesses now, they really want to hear about the negotiating. They want to hear about hiring, you know, obviously the Rooney Rule, the three coaches in 50 years, those types of things are, you know, important, but people really want to hear about the nuances. You know, how did he conduct an interview? And I really got into these conversations about how he always talked to people when he was interviewing about their family, and he was looking for their clues to see, you know, if I ask you, either of you guys, hey, do you have good values? Of course you're going to say, yeah, we have high, you know, our values are good values. But to really understand it, he had a great way of looking for those clues, of understanding, did someone respect their mother? Did they respect their wife? Did they respect, you know, someone else that they would engage with in close contact? And how do they describe that relationship? So that's become a lot of it, that has become something that folks have asked me over and over again and seems to be a lot of interest. So I have learned a lot in different ways to sort of describe that base idea of being a good person and win, but there's I guess nuances that sure. I didn't expect going in.
Sure.
You know, if you don't mind, take a second to just reflect on my own story of your dad. I certainly didn't know him, but one day when I worked for a helicopter company, we were asked to bring a helicopter into Heinz Field to blow dry the field under the auspices of Greg Norman and things like this, and your dad's connections to the UPMC folks anyways. One of the cool, so we did this without getting into all of the boring details, but I took my kids, and my kids were very little, and we walked on the field, and there was your dad standing there just in, you know, normal little jacket, you know, pants, whatever, you know, and I said to my kids, I said, that's Mr. Rooney. And my son says, Dad, I hate football. I said, shh, don't say that. But, but the coolest thing that happened that day is we were there for almost 3 hours helping to fix the field for the next day's game against the Cleveland Browns. Your dad saw to it that my kids were taken somewhere with a staff member to sit and watch cartoons in one of the offices. And then at the end of the day, he made sure every person on that was there from my staff and my kids received tickets to the game, 50-yard line tickets to the game the next day, a sweatshirt, which I still have, uh-huh. and hats. And like for my kids to understand now that they're in their 20s, mid to late 20s, that those things came directly from your dad and how to see how he interacted with us that day. I mean, I could talk to a person outside a friend of Walmart. It could be your dad.
Well, that's the whole point, that he's known to Pittsburghers as that relatable guy. And the tradition continues with the family, and I think that's what's amazing.
Well, I always say, look, Pittsburgh's done a lot more for the Rooneys than the Rooneys ever did for Pittsburgh. And my father loved being from here. He acted like everyone else we know in Pittsburgh.
Right, exactly.
You know, he spoke with I would laugh when he was in Ireland and, you know, he had to speak publicly, which, you know, my father was never a great public speaker. He didn't love to do that.
That's what you said.
And, he'd be up on those podiums. And you'd hear some yins coming out. And, you know, I'd always be laughing because I'm like, you know, the Irish are wondering about our accent in general, and now they hear the yins accent. So,
doesn't get better than that.
exactly.
The uptake of the book, I know, you know, do you find business leaders are reading this? Because one of the things I know that I've read in different books is vulnerability. A leader needs to show vulnerability and emotion. And it seems like your dad did that. But so are you finding that business leaders, more than just sports people and yinzers who want to know the backstory, yeah. are buying this book and they're part of your speaking circuit at this point?
Well, let me say one thing about the sports side, and then I'll address the business side.
Okay.
So from the time we launched the book, November 14th, until 2 weeks after Christmas, there were three books in what Amazon calls the football biography section. And my book was number one. Obviously, I'm proud of that. But this is the most significant accomplishment of all. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's books were 2 and 3. So we were ahead of Brady and Belichick. So
I love that.
There's nothing I could be happier about.
There's no better yinzer way to describe that scorecard.
Awesome.
Yes.
Exactly. We would look every day to see if we were remaining ahead of them. We did throughout the whole Christmas sale.
But Jim, did you commentate it? Were you like, all right, it looks like the Rooney book is in the lead because. Anyway, go ahead. Answer the business part.
I fretted every day about that.
Sure, like, sure.
They're not going to beat me. They're not going to beat this.
Right. Right.
So.
And as far as a business standpoint.
But yeah, the business community has really begun to embrace it. It's interesting. You know, you spend a lot of time selling a book around the holiday season. Because everyone buys things.
Sure.
And then sort of January things went down and that was kind of expected. But now we're getting more reviews, since sort of mid February. And I guess people, you know, this makes sense, but people get a lot of books. And when they get around to reading yours, it's been really kind of fun to see that there's been this little bit of uptick in conversation around it, yeah. in interest and people saying, you know, I really enjoyed this book. So, that's nice to see. And as we're saying, the business community, I think, really appreciates that there's a story there. There's a lot of great leadership books, but here's a narrative of a guy who was very successful,
yeah.
you know, in a very high profile industry.
Well, and the leadership shows, and I know we can't keep you forever. I would love to, but, from the Steelers who John and I have been lucky enough to work with from, you know, we do the Santonio Holmes event every year for his Sickle Cell Foundation. We work with Arthur and with his efforts with the Ronald McDonald House and things like that. Every one of them who we've been honored to be around, they hold themselves, they carry themselves well, and they credit your family for that. And the question we've asked from Hines Ward to, you know, again, Santonio is to Juju, is it the same from generation to generation? What is it like to meet the other guys? And they said, it is part of a Steeler rule that's unsaid, where this is the standard we expect. And this is how each generation kind of handles each other. And kudos to you, because it's the same story told by a different player every time we've talked to them, right? It's just, that's the whole, it's more than just a winning team. It's this leadership role that they feel that they have to step into.
And it seems that you've carried that rule into your family, right?
Exactly.
It's the, as far as how you guys carry yourself.
Well, thank you. I think, my, you know, I'm the eighth of nine kids. And I think my mother would say I probably act that way the least. So
I don't want to meet the ninth one.
So, you know, when you talk about that, the two people I think of, and there's, you know, my father and Chuck Knoll, I think are so important in terms of the transition of the Steelers to what we see as success.
Mm-hmm.
But that quality of touch, of touching someone's heart, you know, I have to speak to my grandfather and you know, who started the Steelers in 32. And he just always had that way of respecting the dignity of every single person that was around him. And he was just fantastic at it. And then the other person is Joe Green, who was very, very tough and set this very, very high standard. But Mel Blunt gave me this term and described this. And Mel is one of those guys who I think really goes out of his way to make sure the next generation and the generation after that follow this lead. But he said, you know, what Joe did is once you sort of passed his stamp of approval, he created this sense of brotherly love. And, you know, when our locker rooms are at their best, it's not that we have all the best talent, which you need talent, but sure, you have that sense of brotherly love amongst these guys that is just really special. And Mel really credits Joe as sort of the guy in the locker room that brought that to the great teams of the 70s.
That's great. Wow.
That's awesome. That's great. Just a couple of names.
Yeah. You know, and actually, well, I know we have to get to the question of the day, but tell me this, because Rachel has had this conversation. You know, her father, who he is in Pittsburgh, being well known. It was really,
yep.
What age do you become aware who your dad is? Because as Rachel will tell you, like, you know, it was normal to meet these musicians and things like that. We're nationally known, but on your end, what age do you realize, like, holy smokes, like, my dad is this?
Well, I always say, you know, in Rachel, I don't know what your experience was, but I guess it's sort of those negative things that sometimes really remind you of a, you know, a different aspect of
sure.
it. And that is, I remember I was 4 or 5 years old. We were in some hotel in Miami and someone asked me for tickets. And they said they'd give me money for them. And I had no idea what tickets were, but I learned soon after that, if they're going to give me money for them, I wanted some of these things. I remember my mother grabbing my hand and pulling me away and, you know, sort of scorning this person.
Yeah. Who does that?
But that's the moment that I knew there was something that was a little bit different.
Well, I'll share this real quick. You know, so my dad,
yeah, please,
being a studio drummer with Motown at some point, he, when James Brown came into town, this is John's favorite story.
I love this
of mine.
Story.
I went to an all-girl Catholic school in Mount Alvernia, and I was called to the office, which was, you know, not in my character. And the principal said, Rachel, you know, we hold ourselves to a high standard. We're Catholic women, blah, blah, blah. You know, we don't appreciate that you're tall-tailing. You are lying in class. And I said, about what? And she said, you know, you told some of the girls that you were with James Brown. And I said, but I was. And so she called my mom and said, you know, your daughter continues to tell this story. And my mom said, but he was here and she was with him. So I can tell you this, in typical Catholic style, my dad was then suckered into doing the performing arts events at Mount Alvernia right, from there on out. But, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff, like you said.
So,
it just
Rachel,
builds your
can
character.
You give us a James Brown yell?
Oh, that was good. I can't. I don't.
Good question, wow! Mr. Rooney. Yeah.
Jump back, kiss
there
myself.
Go.
Hey.
There you go.
That's fantastic.
Listen, this might be my favorite new moment.
He gets the award for best question of the day sure. All right. Jim Rooney, the book is A Different Way to Win, Dan Rooney's story from the Super Bowl to the Rooney Rule. You have to go, if you're a Yinzer, go get it just because. But in the meantime, if you're listening to this and you're in business, and again, the whole idea of consensus building is a lost art these days.
For sure.
So that's the official stuff. Now we come to the super official stuff where it's the question of the day.
Yeah, and we have to find out where we're going to find them and all that good stuff, too. So the question of the day, whether you celebrate Passover or Easter or whatever the holiday is that's coming up, it is a holiday weekend. What would be your ideal quarantine holiday meal?
Mine?
Yes.
I eat pretty plain food.
Oh.
So I would probably have some sort of plain fish and vegetables.
Okay.
Wow. So, that's so boring. We were hoping
it's so boring, isn't it?
We might have to change it up.
My mother, who is, you know, her mother was an Irishwoman. Her parents both came from Ireland in 1927. Mm-hmm. Always said, she's an Irish cook and her best meal was at an Italian restaurant.
There you go. Doesn't get better.
Oh, I love it. All right. Everybody can find your book, A Different Way to Win, on Amazon.com. And where do they follow? You have a Facebook page called A Different Way to Win as well.
We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're really starting to push into LinkedIn again, sort of with the business message. You can get the book at SteelersShop.com. And our good friends at Giant Eagle have been a partner. So there's still some books at Giant Eagle.
Okay.
That's good.
Well, maybe they're off the shelf too. I hope everyone bought one when they were buying all the toilet paper.
There you go. And using it for different reasons.
Right. Exactly. At least read it once first.
Yes, right.
It's such a pleasure to talk to you. We can't thank you enough for making the time for us.
Hey guys, you know I love being with you, so let's do it again. You know, maybe halfway to St. Patrick's Day.
We love it.
We love
yes.
it.
Yeah,
and don't think we won't remember.
Sunlight makes me clean. Your light is the sweetest thing this boy's ever seen.
So our music guest this week, you've been listening to the song Pretty Good as we're going through each guest today on our extended version of it's sort of our extended quarantine version of it because people have so little to do and it's a holiday in any way. So weird. But Tim Vitullo is someone that you and your father introduced me to, not literally, but his music at your mom's concert last August.
Mm-hmm.
And I've quite frankly fanboyed over it since then.
You did.
And I love the sound.
Yeah. We have to be honest, right? Because we knew some of the folks who were going to be on opening up.
Yeah.
And we've interviewed them. We've heard them perform. Tim, we had not. And so we did this like private little, who'd you like best?
Yeah.
And let's hope that our dear friend Byron is not listening because Tim just climbed that ladder.
Right. And it kind of made me angry because at the concert, we were busy doing all the logistics and we only got to listen to a little bit of it. But oh my God, when I realized what I was missing by not listening to your music, I was really, so stop talking all that and let our guest Tim Vitullo talk. Tim Vitullo, welcome to the Jagoff podcast.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the very kind words. I appreciate it. You can't see me, but I'm bright red.
Well, please. You know, the good thing about Pittsburgh is we seriously know good things, right? Like, we're not going to boast unless it's pretty good, and you're obviously among that clientele now musically. So talk a little bit about how Tim Vitullo Band came to be. And you're sort of at this, well, minus the pandemic, you're at this, you know, crescendo of work. You're not just performing here, which in Pittsburgh life is big time, right? If you're going mm-hmm. beyond Pittsburgh, you've really made it. So give us a little background since we've never interviewed you before.
Yeah, absolutely. So to sort of wind it way back, you know, I graduated from college and, you know, had a great time and have always played in bands, you know, be it cover bands or original projects. So I got back to Pittsburgh after college and none of my friends had really come back. Mm-hmm. You know, they had all gone to D.C. or Chicago or New York or Boston or all these different cities everywhere. So I was kind of sitting around like, oh, wow, you know, I'm not surrounded by all my best friends anymore. So I kind of did what everybody does, and popped on the classifieds and started looking for some bands to play with. And through that, jumping around and some trial and error, wound up with a blues band that I was a part of for a few years and loved it. And it was, just a surreal experience. I was 23 at the time. And I remember to preface too, my first love is blues music. Mm-hmm. That genre speaks to me in such a way that's so powerful and so moving, that it was finally a dream come true to find a bunch of guys who were as passionate about that. It's very hard, being a millennial or a Gen Y or whatever I technically am, to find people that get excited about scratchy old blues records.
It's true. Yeah.
That's not a common thing. So I remember it was this surreal experience. I came and I auditioned for the band, and they were all significantly older than me. They were all in their 50s and 60s. And again, I was 23.
You are so lucky that
what the hell's wrong with that?
40s.
Yeah. No. I just turned 30 this past Monday. So yeah. 40,
ooh.
Way closer. Way
yeah.
Closer than
it used. All right. Yeah, all right, Tim.
You're safe. I go to this band and they said, hey, we love playing with you and we don't mind that you're, this punk kid and we're all these, hardened and wise adults. Your first gig is in a month. We're going to open for B.B. King at the Benedict.
Shut up, Tim.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, like this is really going places. Holy cow. So it was a lot of fun. And I did that band for 3 years. And that was my first taste of touring and traveling out of state and playing blues festivals and clubs and different things. And it was great to be a part of that and to get that experience as a young guy. So we always drove in a caravan of trucks. And I think as hazing, everybody in the band stuck me with Brent, who was the drummer of the band at the time. They were like, oh, yeah, you could not go to Brent, thinking that was like this sort of punishment for me, or my trial, to see if I could hang. Uh-huh. But it really backfired on them because Brent and I, through that, found that we have this shared musical language and love of all these bands, particularly the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers and all these things. So whenever that band decided to fold it up, and, those guys kind of after a little while, it got a little bit grueling, and being away from their wives and families, they had grandkids who were growing up, and it is hard, being away.
Yeah.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you miss soccer games and you miss, first communions and family reunions and birthdays and all those things. I think they kind of said, hey, we've had our fun here, but it's time to do something else. So out of that, I looked at Brent and said, hey, I've been working on some songs at home that aren't blues songs, but I think we hit it off really well. Would you want to keep doing this? Because he is, I think he's 43, 44 now. So he was a little bit younger than them as well. So he still had some gas in the tank. And that was how Tim Vitullo Band started. And we've been really lucky from there. All those songs kind of became the first record that you can go and listen to now, that Josephine and Assorted Train songs. And we've had some great people come through our door kind of in the 5 years. I can't believe it's been 5 years since then. To do that and just a continuation of it. We had known what it was like to tour and to get out of Pittsburgh and to play all these different festivals and clubs. So that was something we really wanted to continue and make a priority about doing once we got things up and running. And, it's been really exciting. We kind of, it's all do it yourself. We don't have management or representation or anything. And we typically do about 80 shows a year in over a dozen states.
Wow. So I guess, to kind of back up, if someone hasn't heard you, they're foolish. But if they've not heard yet, there is that bluesy feel. But it's not just blues. How do you classify what your sound is present day?
That's always a good question. And we always get, it's always fun to, we kind of take bets on what people will say at the venue we sound like. We get a lot of different ones.
And what do you get?
So my singing voice, I get a lot that it sounds like James Taylor.
Yeah.
So they're kind of like, oh, it sounds like James Taylor, but it rocks so much more. Like, yeah. Okay. We'll take that.
Yeah. Right.
I call it, I call it Americana or Roots Rock. And whenever you see us live, it's definitely, we all love and share that jam band musical language, you know, the mm-hmm. Grateful Dead, the Allman mm-hmm. Brothers, all that stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of improvisation. And as you may have saw if you were at the Liver event, you know, we stretch the songs out, we medley different songs and you know, you'll hear everything that's on the record, but you'll also hear a whole lot more, you know, depending on, you know, how we're feeling that night and maybe what we listened to in the car on the way there. Maybe we'll try to insert that into the show a little bit and give you something different every time.
Well, I love just the song that we're listening to today, the church organ even coming in there.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it comes in out of nowhere. Like, you know, there's from what I've found is that there's the consistency in the music is certainly your voice, but it's, but then there are all these other things that keep coming into the different songs. So I'm never bored mm-hmm. by any of the songs. They sound uniquely the same with your voice, but not enough that they're just, oh, that's one sound like, each one sounds completely
you're not like,
different
oh,
to me.
That's TV.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my man, Tim.
TV.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
and
that was,
go ahead.
Or go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, that was definitely a goal with that first record, you know, to make a full length statement so that we had a catalog so that if somebody booked us for, you know, an hour long show, we could play, you know, an hour long show and it would be dynamic.
Sure.
You know, we have so many diverse influences, you know, at any day at our house, you know, I'm listening to, you know, classic country records or bebop or blues or, you know, pop music or, you know, any of these different influences. And it was really important to me, and especially as a writer, kind of just starting out making my first real statement as a, you know, hey, this is what Tim Vitullo sounds like, not Tim Vitullo is part of this other person.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was fun to try to capture all that.
Talk about the Pittsburgh scene in general, though, because obviously the pinnacle of the career is that you're leaving Pittsburgh, even if it is only to Ohio or wherever. But what is it like now with the Pittsburgh scene, and where do you most like to perform?
Sure. So my observation of it is there's a lot of different pockets and different smaller kind of sub scenes within the bigger picture. And I think that's so cool. Like even that, you know, hanging out, you know, Rachel with your dad and that whole scene, it was all these people that I've never met before, maybe missed, you know, cause I'm a little bit younger and wasn't around when they were playing 5-6 nights a week. You know, there's a great folk scene. There's a great hard rock metal scene. There's a great, jazz scene that's hanging around. And they're all very, very, tightly guarded.
Yes.
You know, you really have to prove to those people that, hey, I know my stuff. I know what I'm doing to be accepted in. But once you're welcomed into that community, it's like this never ending bear hug of just love and support.
Right.
You know, and that people will ride with you till the end. And that, I mean, I think that's so true of Pittsburgh in general.
Right.
You know, maybe there's that initial skepticism of, okay, is this for real? Is this legit? But once it's sussed out, then everybody is, you know, let's all jump in the deep end together.
And where do you love to play? Where are you like, yes, we're there again?
You know, it's really funny. We were actually supposed to play at the Park House in Deutschtown last night.
Oh, okay.
Which is, it's not a traditional music venue
right.
by any means. You know, it's kind of one of those classic shotgun bars that, you know, it's deep, but not wide at all. You know, a place like that has built up this great reputation, and Zamir, the owner, is really picky about who he puts in. So the people that come there are always excited to see live music and are really receptive to you trying new things or doing new stuff. And because it's not, you know, because it's in Deutschland, it's a little more laid back. He doesn't charge a cover. So we run into so many people and so many people say, hey, that's where we found out about you. That's where we discovered you. It's always fun. It's always a great time. You know, those kind of best kept secrets. We really love to, anytime we can do stuff with Wiggle Whiskey, you know, we did a whole bunch of things at their Barrel House and Threadbare also over on the north side.
I did not know that. We're going to have to do that.
Those guys throw some of the best parties around. So we're always honored whenever they want us to be a part of it.
Well, so what, if I go to a,
he's just trying to come up with a,
if I go
question,
to a Tim Vitullo show, what does the audience look like out there? Am I, with my, is my gray hair and bushy eyebrows going to look old in the crowd?
No, we definitely, just because, like, my influence is it, and the tunes we cover, you know, pretty good. You know, that song, you know, we're a draw from those 60s, 70s songwriters. Those are my favorite. You know,
okay.
Paul Simon and you know, now the late Bill Withers, late John Prine, Joni Mitchell, Van Morrison, all that, James Taylor, you know, Eric Clapton. Those are all the artists that, as a songwriter, I really gravitate toward, and I love those records so much. So we're definitely very popular with the baby boomer crowd.
Tim, you had them until you said three letters, Van. Listen, I love Van Morrison, but I don't love traditional Van Morrison. Like, I, you know, Brown Eyed Girl's fine, Moon Dance, you know, but I like I have the albums and I know songs, you know, and John hates Van Morrison. So it's kind of funny.
It's tough.
Funny.
It's
we kind of rock it up a little bit. Like, we do like a kind of like a, it's not like power ballad, because I think whenever you say power ballad, people think of like hair bands.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
It's not that rock. It's like somewhere between there and the original of Into the Mystic that people get a kick out of.
But Crazy Love. Crazy Love is one of my favorite songs by Van Morrison.
We do a medley of that and Tupelo Honey.
Ooh. Well, when I come to see your show, I'll just take that as my bathroom break.
Tim, who said that?
You can flash us the one or two and we'll play it longer.
Right, right. That'll be when I break the seal. Yeah.
That was so funny. I can't help it. That is funny. I will be there listening front and
Listen,
center.
Tim, before, I know we have to let you go because you're probably preparing for things this weekend as well, but, I just forgot my question. There's an edit right there.
There's an edit.
We're listening to Pretty Good. Tell us about this song.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, John Prine was always an interesting artist. We talked about him in college, and it was more like an urban legend. You know, there was this guy out there who wrote these amazing songs that you didn't hear on the radio, but, you know, everybody who loved great songwriters knew about him. And it was hard to find. You know, there wasn't Spotify, and, you know, we were still kind of, you know, illegally downloading music in college at the time. You know, that was really, you didn't have any money. So, like, if you went to the record store, it was like, you know, I got to be really choosy about what I buy. And a lot of record stores didn't have it. You know, people weren't reissuing things on vinyl yet at that point. So it was really hard to come by these songs. So whenever you heard it, it was like this big secret. Like, you're in the know. You found out about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he became this idyllic songwriter for us. You know, all the people that I kind of hung out with at that time. And whenever I made that transition, you know, from, you know, not being a blues artist or known around here as a blues artist and saying, hey, Tim Vitullo is more than that. It's, there's blues influence, but the songwriting is really the part that we're trying to bring here. You know, it's not woke up this morning, yada, da, 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 da,
exactly.
Or whatever it is. It was really important to me, and those records were really formative. That song particularly, I remember, I was traveling for my day job at the time to Europe a lot, and I was in Stockholm, Sweden. And I was, you know, after kind of doing that a few times, the novelty of, like, let's go out every night and see what this, you know, new European city's all about and get into trouble and everything else that you do, you know, as a young person.
Right.
You know, with a credit card in Europe. So I remember, you know, you kind of sit at home and they had a whole bunch of American TV programming, which was kind of nice. You know, whenever you got a little bit homesick, like, oh, I can turn on the TV and hear a show in English or something. It kind of made you feel like, okay, I feel a little bit better about being here for another couple weeks or whatever. But I was listening to the album that's on, and it came on. And I remember right before I left, I had this guitar riff that I was kind of messing around with. And I heard that song, and it just immediately, like, the pieces fit together. It was like, yeah, like, this is the song, and this riff needs to do it. And I remember I got back, you know, a couple weeks later, and as soon as I got home from the airport, I picked up my guitar and just sat and played it through. You know, I'd been the past couple weeks, like, running it through in my head, like, okay, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do that. And kind of played it through one time and recorded it, and it was, like, done.
Hmm.
And it meant so much to me that, you know, this was kind of you know, kind of the new Tim Vitullo and where it's headed. It's these are the influences now. And it was so great to be able to pay tribute and to hopefully, you know, bring something new to that song. Kind of a funny story. Dave, our bassist now, he called me one day. He said, "Hey, I think somebody stole your song." And I said, "Oh, yeah, really? What do you mean?" He said, "Yeah, check this out." And he sent me a YouTube link, and it was John Prine's original recording. And I said, no, that's where that comes from. He's like, it was just so different. I had no idea. You know,
I love that he reversed it. Yeah. Right? Yeah,
right.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I said, no, we took it from him.
That's so funny.
But, yeah, especially this week with his passing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, due to coronavirus, it's been such a treat to be able to go back and relive all the great performances of that. And it's been a treat, you know, just like it was hard to come by when I was younger to be able to share that song with so many people across the country whenever we play it live. And they say, "Hey, where'd that come from?" And you get to tell them about his legacy. And,
yeah.
And turn them on to this just titan of a songwriter.
Yeah. Well, Tim, it has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. We always love a good party, so we like when our bands are with us, but this is the best as we can do at this point. So, and you're the talk about crescendo, you're the crescendo ending of this podcast. But before we let you go, we always have a question of the day. And that question today is, you know, this is the Easter Passover weekend while we're recording this here, and then we're in a quarantine here. So if you had to pick your quarantine feast or holiday feast, what would that be?
Oh, so we eat Easter dinner in the Vitullo house is my second favorite meal of the year. No question. We do it Greek style. So it's, you know, leg of lamb, orzo.
Okay.
You know, all the grape leaves and everything,
nice.
Which is great. But my favorite meal, if I had to have one meal, we do the seven fish dinner for Christmas, the Italian tradition.
Okay.
And that's, I look forward to that every year. I'm so glad that my girlfriend has agreed to do Christmas with us, that we don't have to share every other year. So I get it every single year. And
nice.
It's always my favorite. So that nice. Would be my quarantine meal.
Very good. Tim Vitullo, thank you. And tell everybody where they find about the Tim Vitullo Band on the online.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. You can check us out at timvitullo.com, and that's V-I-T-U-L-L-O. Or on social media, it's at official TVB. It's in Tim Vitullo Band. You know, we're trying to post a whole bunch of stuff online to keep you yeah. occupied during quarantine. So
very cool.
Give us a follow and sign up for the mailing list and try to help you pass the time.
Well, there you go. So an extended version of the podcast.
Listen, I'm sure this is going to live up to everyone's expectations.
Yeah.
Amazing. These are great Pittsburgh people to hear stories from. And listen, don't get us wrong. We'd love to hear stories from the person who lives three doors down from you and has a unique job.
Yeah.
It just so happens that this week worked out for these three superstars, and they have great stories to tell. So
yeah.
take a listen to next week. We don't know who's on yet, but again, tell us who you think should be on.
Yeah, we would appreciate it. Again, John at yajagoff.com and Rachel with two A's, R-A-C-H-A-E-L at yajagoff.com. Tell us if you want us to just come and sit in your dining room. We'll do that.
We will not until the pandemic is over.
We're coming with masks on.
No, we're not. Please.
So
if you don't edit, don't listen to him. Peace.
Thanks to Scott Harbaugh. Thanks to Natalie Bensavenga.
Thanks to the one and only Mr. Jim Rooney. And thanks to Tim Vitullo and Band for the great music this week.
And to the Rennebeck family and Tanner for letting us use the space again.
And, of course, to our sponsors, Rorick Honda. With hope and positivity, the Rorick Automotive Group will be back to business as usual in just a couple of short weeks. But in the meantime, shopping online with knowledgeable and dedicated representatives is key.
Plus, look for the Driving Positivity campaign through social media to keep our spirits and your spirits up and to remind us all that we are all in this together, Pittsburgh. In the meantime, visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
Friend in Fremont, he sells used cars, you know. Well, he calls me up twice a year just to ask me how to go. Pretty good, not bad, I can't complain. 'Cause actually everything is just about the same. I met a girl from again. She was politely told, pretty good, not bad, can't complain. Cause actually everything's just about the same. Moonlight makes me dizzy, sunlight makes me clean. Your light is the sweetest thing this boy's ever seen. To Arkansas, she got raped by Dobbin's dog. She was doing good till she went in the wood, got pinned up against her love. Pretty good, not bad, she can't complain. Cause actually all the dogs are just about the same. Moonlight makes me dizzy, sunlight makes me clean. Your light is the sweetest thing this boy's ever seen. About the same.